Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. It is Wednesday, just after 2 p.m. on June 22nd, 2011. We'll come back from recess. Carla, can you please call the vote? Mm-hmm. Sorry, the roll.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. We have one item on the council calendar this afternoon. Can you please read the title for resolution, item number 651.
Accept City of Portland Disparity Study Report and direct the Office of Management and Finance to take immediate action to enhance the city's equity programs and to bring forward recommendations to City Council to further expand and strengthen the programs no later than February 2012.
Thanks, Carla. Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. And Mayor Adams, thank you for giving me this challenging and important assignment. Today, I bring before Council the final disparity study report for review and discussion. The resolution sponsored by Mayor Adams and me, if accepted by the Council, does three things. One, it accepts the report prepared by the BBC Research and Consulting Project team. Two, it directs the appropriate city departments to take immediate action to strengthen our commitment to equity in contracting. Three, it sets a deadline for more long-term work to strengthen the city's commitment to ending disparity in construction contracting and professional services. Today's presentation is the culmination of almost 2 years of work by the city, staff at the Portland Development Commission, and a committed and diverse group of volunteers who served on my advisory group. From our earliest conversations about the need for a new disparity study, this council embraced a simple idea. We can and we must do better. The BBC team will address in detail a number of fundamental questions this afternoon, including one, what is a disparity study? And two, why does Portland need one? Here's the short version. A disparity study is a legally required document used to defend programs in court which combat historic discrimination. Studies contain three separate legally important sections. First, this report and other studies utilize a statistical methodology supported by the courts. Let's call this the science of the work. Second, the report uses extensive qualitative analysis. Simply put, the team interviewed contractors and professionals to get behind the numbers, to the personal stories of how people experience discrimination in our community. And third, the draft report was presented to the public for comment. All of those comments and questions were used to shape the final report, which you have before you today. As you will hear repeatedly this afternoon, the report is a three-legged stool, and each of the three legs has legal significance. In the battleground that swirls around contracting access and equity in America, it is essential for us to have a disparity study that uses methods that are supported by the federal courts. One of the reasons that BBC was selected is that courts across America have adopted their methodology. And Jim Van Dyke from the City Attorney's Office will confirm today that BBC's methodology meets the applicable legal standards. There are a number of people I want to acknowledge and thank today before we begin. First, to everyone who participated in the public meetings, sent us emails, called, or visited the project website, thank you. You have made this a substantially better report. While there are many people who put in long hours to create this report, I want to offer special recognition and thanks to the members of my commissioner's advisory group. These volunteers met five times, pored over hundreds of pages of documents, and questioned and challenged the project team from the first day we got together. They were guided by passion for the issues and deep and relevant experience in our community. You will hear from a few of them later this afternoon, but I want to identify the entire group and ask you to stand as I read your name. Marcella Alcantar, a small business owner with Alcantar & Associates. Jackie Babicki, from the Small Business Advisory Council, Babbage Performance Partners; Jason Lim of the Asian Reporter; Penny Painter from the Native American Chamber of Commerce; Maurice Roming, NAMCO, President, O'Neill Electric, Inc.; Carmen Rubio from the Latino Network. She serves as the Executive Director. Rudy Martinez, Field Representative, Pacific Northwest Council of Carpenters; Nate McCoy, Portland Bureau of Housing; Andrew Beyer, LCG Pence Construction. Mayor and colleagues, these are the citizen volunteers who put in a lot of time. Could we give them a round of applause for their work? I also want to thank this afternoon the six people that have worked so tirelessly to make this day possible. They are Jeff Baer, Christine Moody, Annette Palmer, Skip Newberry, John Jackley, and Jim Blackwood. One final note about the scope of the report before us. In our first advisory group meeting, Marcella Alcantar proposed expanding the study to include professional services. After an extensive discussion, the group believed that was the right thing to do. We knew it would add to the cost of the study, and we knew it would take longer to complete the study. But it is a much stronger study because of that recommendation. And Marcella, we thank you. Here's the lineup for today's presentation, Mayor. First, representatives of the city and BBC will present the report to council. The following people have spent a great deal of time working on the report over the past few months: Christine Moody, Chief Procurement Officer for the city; David Keene and Kevin Williams from BBC, who we'll ask up in a moment; and Jim Van Dyke from the City Attorney's Office. Our second panel is made up of members drawn from our advisory group: Marcella Alcantar, Andrew Beyer, and Maurice Roming. Our final panel is composed of Gail Castillo, Andre Baugh, and Jorge Gora. After the third panel, we will move to public testimony. Mayor Adams?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, and thank you for your work on this, having been the staff, a staff project manager, one of three for the original disparity study. I know how time-consuming and important this task is. My initial remarks are focused on the handoff that comes with Commissioner Fish's conclusion of the study, and then my responsibility working with the team and with the community to close the disparity gaps that have been identified by the study. And to underscore the statistical results, the anecdotal evidence and the public comments have all provided us with the legal grounds to continue and enhance current equity programs. And we have the legal grounds to start addressing issues such as bonding, insurance, pre-qualification, capacity building, access to capital, and other systemic obstacles to the success of minority and women-owned businesses in Portland. Additionally, with the adoption last month by the City Council of the Neighborhood Economic Development and Small Business Strategy, addressing such issues as financing and technical assistance for minority-owned small businesses, it will be provided through the new Economic Development Strategy in a more comprehensive and coordinated fashion throughout the city. The City Council recently approved more funding to support these efforts as part of the budget, and we plan to leverage partnerships with community-based organizations that help small businesses. Immediate actions are of interest to all, and so we have worked with Commissioner Fish's office, with staff in the city, and consulted with others in the community. And immediate actions will include the following: as soon as we can make sure that we've consulted with the appropriate stakeholders and our partner organizations. Number one, graduate all sheltered market contractors by October 2011, cease the sheltered market program as it currently exists, and create an improved and strengthened program to replace it. Two, review and revise the contractor pre-qualification program. Require all requests for project-specific special pre-qualification to be evaluated and approved by the chief procurement officer before being applied. Approval of all pre-qualification requests, $250,000 and under, will be based upon bonding capacity as provided by a surety. Applications for more than applications $250,000 and under will not be forwarded to the bureaus for evaluation for additional pre-qualification. Number three, review and strengthen the Good Faith Efforts Program. Although the study showed that the Good Faith Efforts Program has been effective in some areas, there is a need to review the current program and look for opportunities to strengthen it. Four, review and revise the Workforce Program. It is known that a number of construction companies are formed by individuals working their way up through the trades. Now that we have an updated study, it is time to review our current workforce training programs to see how they may be opportunities for growth. Five, outreach. Conduct quarterly outreach events using electronic notifications of solicitations. Assist general contractors with outreach for subcontracting opportunities. Six, do a better job of forecasting contracting opportunities and make sure that despite our best efforts that we are actually getting the word out in plenty advance for minority and women-owned firms to be ready to bid on these contracts. The immediate actions contained in the resolution, what I just summarized, are intended to be first steps, but they're the beginning of what I expect to be significant changes in the way that the city does contracting. Raising the approval basis from $250,000 from $100,000 based on bonding capacity will bring some quick relief to smaller contractors, but we're going to need to examine the impact of any kind of pre-qualification has on the ability of minority and women contractors to bid on projects, and that analysis should be part of our work plan. I'd also like to point out that the need for change does not stop at the city's procurement practices, but extends to every bureau and every bureau director. Portland is a city that is striving to become the city of the most equal of opportunities. We can't keep doing things the same and using the same approach and expecting different results. We're going to have to think differently, explore alternative contracting methods, eliminate discrimination, whether conscious or unconscious, and inequitable barriers, and create a culture of equity, of opportunity among all the bureaus and our partners. There is an immediate sense of urgency to this task. Contractors are already losing ground in a difficult economy, and we must do everything possible to provide more opportunities. With that, I will turn to Ms. Moody.
Thank you, Commissioner and Mayor. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. So I'm going to start a little bit talking about how we got to where we are today. And as the background, as the mayor mentioned, in 1995, the city and PDC took part in an Oregon Regional Consortium disparity study that examined public construction contracting methods. The 1995 study concluded that minority and women-owned businesses were underutilized and at prime contracting levels. The 1995 study also made a series of recommendations that resulted in the city's adoption of a fair contracting and employment strategy. Programs we currently have in place resulting from that strategy are the Sheltered Market Program, which takes into consideration construction projects $200,000 and below, the Good Faith Efforts Program, which is largely a subcontracting program for projects over $200,000, the Workforce Training and Hiring Program requires apprenticeship training on construction projects, women, minorities, and disadvantaged individuals gain access to training and employment in the construction trades, and the Professional Services Marketing and Outreach Program. This is to increase opportunities for MWSB firms to obtain professional services contracts by increasing access to useful information and removing barriers. It also includes a 15% of total points in RFP are awarded towards diversity criteria. So the reason why we chose to do the study at this point is that the data from the previous study is outdated and may not provide a sufficient legal basis for in support of the city and PDC's current minority business and women business enterprise programs. The new study evaluated the effectiveness of race and gender neutral practices in public construction and construction-related professional services contracting, as well as relevant city policies and practices. So in order to do this, we did an RFP. And in April of 2009, a request for proposal for a disparity study was issued. The evaluation committee, which included community representatives, chose BBC Research and Consulting, headquartered in Denver, Colorado, to perform the disparity study for the city and PDC. In September of 2009, a contract was awarded to BBC in the amount of $831,000. BBC is a 41-year-old market, economic, and policy research firm. They became involved in disparity studies shortly after the Supreme Court struck down the City of Richmond, Virginia minority-owned business program. Clients include large cities such as Phoenix, Fort Worth, Las Vegas, and Columbus, Ohio. BBC conducted the 1990 Denver disparity study and provided support to the city of Denver when it was sued by a local firm over the constitutionality of the program. The Denver Minority and Women-Owned Business Program was upheld by the 10th Circuit Court in 2003. More recently, BBC conducted a disparity analysis for the California Department of Transportation, or Caltrans. The Associated General Contractors of San Diego and the Pacific Legal Foundation challenged Caltrans in court. The United States District Court, Eastern District of California, ruled in favor of Caltrans in a summary judgment and found that the disparity study was comprehensive, included extensive statistical evidence as well as anecdotal evidence, provided substantial statistical and anecdotal evidence of discrimination in the California contract industry, and supported Caltrans' implementation of the federal DBE program. Over the past 20 years, BBC has conducted disparity and availability analysis for over 80 state and local governments across the United States. For the city and PDC studies, BBC worked with four minority or women-owned firms, three of which have offices in Portland. FM Birch & Associates was used for interviews as a minority women-owned business. Group AGB was used for data collection and procurement review as a minority business. Montesi and Associates was used for interviews as a minority business enterprise. Holland & Knight is not a minority firm but has a local office and was used for legal counsel. And Customer Research International was used for telephone surveys and interviews. It's a minority-owned firm but not certified in the state of Oregon. The overall percentage of MWSB on this contract was 20%. So after we issued the RFP and we developed a contract, the study itself began. BBC began the assignment in the fall of 2009, and Commissioner Fish convened an advisory group, and he mentioned the members earlier. They met five times throughout the process. BBC presented a draft report to the city and PDC in January of 2011. In April, the draft report was released to the public. This opened a four-week public comment period in which a public forum was held and online comments were received. Public comments on the draft report were received in three common areas. Additional data was provided that was analyzed by BBC and included in appropriate sections of the final report. Statements regarding experiences or program recommendations were added to the qualitative material in the final report, and questions about the study approach were reviewed and helped shape the final report, and extensive revisions to the executive summary were made. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Van Dyke.
Jim? Yes. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. Jim Van Dyke, City Attorney's Office. I just wanted to give a kind of a brief legal overview before we have BBC talk about this, because I'd like to just take a minute and explain why we have disparity studies. I think Christine mentioned the Croson versus City of Richmond case, and that was a case in which the city had set some hard goals, hard preferences in favor of minorities. That was challenged, and the Supreme Court said that could not be permitted, that public agencies had to ensure that its actions were both race and gender neutral. Now, the court went on to say that the public agencies could consider taking race-conscious actions, but only after performing a very rigorous statistical type study, which we by shorthand call a disparity study, to show that there was an actual disparity between the usage of minority and women-owned businesses and their actual availability in the local marketplace. In other words, it was no longer sufficient for a legislative body such as the City Council or a legislature to say, we know there has been discrimination. As we all know, there has been discrimination. It was not sufficient simply to say that to establish some goals, to take some race-conscious measures. Instead, the Supreme Court set what I consider to be a fairly high bar to jump over in order to demonstrate a kind of rigorous mathematical statistical disparity in order to permit public agencies to take race into account, to take gender into account when they make contracting decisions. Now, as I mentioned, the study looks at the actual usage of minorities, which is basically a review of history, of what our historical usage has been. Over the past 5 years, that's what BBC has looked at, I believe, through 2004 to 2009. They also take a look at the availability of minority and women-owned firms. And I have to say that in the past 10 or 15 years, the courts that have considered disparity studies, and there have been legal challenges to disparity studies, have become increasingly strict and, again, have been raising the bar as to what constitutes sufficient statistical evidence of minority and women-owned business availability. For example, they have now said, even though some previous cases were not requiring this, the more recent cases have now said that the consultants must take what is called relative capacity into account. In other words, businesses, you just can't count minority ownership and say, well, I've got one minority-owned business and one white-owned business, and so the availability is 50%. No, you have to take their size into account. What size of contracts can they bid on? You know, how much capacity do they have? Can they take on more than one contract at a time? And so the availability bar has been raised. And it was because of some of these legal issues that our office actually took what I consider to be kind of an unusual step, was we participated in the evaluation panel when we took a look at disparity study consultants to make sure that they were going to use a methodology that was going to meet the legal requirements. BBC was a firm that we were convinced were going to be able to meet that bar. I have to say that there were some other firms that applied that we did not think would meet the bar. For example, they said that relative capacity, that is, the current size of my firm is, you know, cannot be untied from the previous discrimination I have suffered. And I agree with that. You know, discrimination may be the reason why a firm is small, and in the absence of discrimination, it would be bigger. The problem is the United States Supreme Court and the other courts have not agreed with that approach. They look at what your firm is able to do right now, not what it might have been able to do in the absence of discrimination. So we look at the current size of the firm, what kind of contracts they can work on, and those are the things we take into account. Once you get to the other side of the study and you decide you find that there is some disparity, the Supreme Court says that in and of itself is not enough to take a race-conscious action. You first must consider race-neutral measures. Okay? Only after you have decided that your previous race-neutral measures haven't been effective, and we've had some race-neutral measures, and to the extent that there's disparity on contracts, we can show that they're not effective. Then you can get into some race-conscious measures, and the Supreme Court has said those measures, you can undertake them, but they must be narrowly tailored. They must be directed at the discrimination that particular minority group is facing, and no more. So these are the legal hurdles we must face. We must do a rigorous statistical study. We must find actual disparity using what they tell us to do in terms of doing an availability analysis.
we must consider race-neutral measures, and after that, we may take race-conscious measures. Now, so that is the legal landscape in which we are currently operating, and having reviewed the BBC study, I am convinced that the BBC study would withstand legal scrutiny if it were challenged.
The you make frequent reference to the Supreme Court about the issue of a firm being small but for historical discrimination. Are those all from the Croson decision, or
those are subsequent to the Croson decision? Not all of them have been Supreme Court cases, but what we do is follow the trend of the federal circuit courts that have been following this issue. They interpret the Croson decision for us. And the most recent cases are the ones that we are citing to you here today in terms of what their requirements are.
And the Caltrans decision, is that a ninth?
The Caltrans decision was, as I think Christine measured, was in the Eastern District Court. It is not a Ninth Circuit court case. If it was appealed, it would go up to the Ninth Circuit. So it is nice, and I would say it's kind of rare to have that kind of test on and such a recent one on your own disparity consultant. But so we're obviously very pleased that their study withstood a legal scrutiny in an area very close to ours.
Thanks. And we're clarifying questions are great. We're going to have an opportunity at the end of the panel discussions for more discussion, but to get everyone up and through.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Or you can sit here and sure. I'll do it for you because I'm not going to talk.
David and Kevin, welcome. If you'd both introduce yourselves and then proceed.
David Keene with BBC Research and Consulting.
Kevin Williams with BBC Research and Consulting.
And we'd rather our team come up here and present today, but they're going to remain in the gallery. But Andre Baugh, Jonathan Colon, and Faye Birch were very important members of our team. And we actually asked them to do something very difficult. As you probably all know them, they know this community extremely well. We were very fortunate to have them agree to be on our team when we competed for this project, and they each had very significant roles. And we asked them to kind of change hats and be, as well as BBC, very objective, neutral researchers and analysts here, information collectors, and then put that information together in the disparity study report. And I just wanted to personally thank them for the fine job that they did in an often very difficult situation of giving you the best information and best advice, not perhaps from their own perspectives, but from their perspectives as excellent people that can go out in the community and compile information in a very neutral, objective way and analyze that information and present it to you. So my thanks to each one of you. We would like to dive in to summarize the evidence here, and we're going to take a very high-level look and then be able to respond to your questions. So there's we won't be throwing a lot of numbers and disparity study indexes and ratios at you. We're going to really try to distill what this means, and I have quite a bit of experience testifying about these issues in court and defending these types of programs in court, so I have some experience of what has been successful. You have had a number of programs that have had a positive impact on the utilization of minority and women-owned firms. In fact, a lot of the procurement and contracting data that we were examining was influenced by those programs that were having a positive effect. And so that's one of the things that we'd like to report to you, that it's when you made these efforts a number of years ago that but for those efforts, things would be much worse for opportunities for minority women-owned firms, especially as sub-consultants and subcontractors and as prime contractors are on the smallest contracts, that those programs did have a positive effect. When you're examining whether you have a need for those programs, then you must look outside of those areas of contracting to where programs did not apply. We found a few examples at the city, and we found more examples for the Portland Development Commission, especially on their what are called sponsored contracts, which are not contracts directly awarded by PDC, but they put some types of resources in, they have some involvement in, but someone else is in charge of the contracting process. We found outside of in city contracts, outside of your programs, there were disparities for minority and women-owned firms, and for the Portland Development Commission on those sponsored contracts, there were very large disparities for minority and women-owned firms. And here's what a disparity means. When we looked at the actual dollars going to minority and women-owned firms, including those that are certified and are not certified, because we found in the Portland area, like many other parts of the country, because of the barriers to becoming certified, and frankly, some of the lack of returns to becoming certified, that firms that may have been certified have let those certifications lapse, or they may simply not go through the process at all. So it was very important for us to get an accurate gauge on the participation of all minority and women-owned firms in city and PDC contracting to count them all. We found that not only through certification records, but through interviews with those business owners and managers of those businesses. So we identified firms that were owned and controlled by minorities and women based on information that was reported to us. We compared that, so we measured this on dollars. We compared that participation with benchmarks of what ought to be given current availability. And when we examined current availability, we started with a list of firms, the best list we could get, that was outside of the any city list, any PDC list, any state of Oregon list. And the information we needed to collect, based on the prior comments here, we were trying to get quite a bit of information on those firms and what types of work they went after and what sizes of contracts they went after. So we could only do that through interviewing the firms itself, the individual firms. So we started with a very large list. We tried to contact as many people as possible. Not everyone was interested in answering our phone calls or may have just not been able to do the interviews with us, but we interviewed more than 1,500 firms about their qualifications and interest in doing specific types of city and PDC prime contracts and subcontracts. This is a great source of information to determine what types of work minority and women-owned firms and majority-owned firms would do for the city and PDC, and what percentage of the dollars for specific types of contracts you might expect to go to minority and women-owned firms if there were a level playing field. When we found city programs in place, we found that the city had a positive impact on the utilization. And in some cases, we found disparities. Overall, we did not, where city programs applied. When city programs did not apply, we found those disparities. We found similar situation in the marketplace as well. So contracts that didn't have any involvement of PDC or the city, when we looked overall at the utilization of minority-owned firms, and we just looked at their revenues, minority women-owned firms were disproportionately small. Their revenues were lower than white male-owned firms. Our statistics showed difficulties in capital bonding and insurance for minority and women-owned firms. They could not, especially for access to capital, they could not be explained by size of the firm, that there seemed to be a race angle to this, to the disadvantages, that there were disadvantages in firms when they were trying to work as prime contractors and subcontractors on local public sector contracts overall, when they were trying to get local subcontracts. And in fact, the existing number of minority women-owned firms relative to white male-owned firms, we found that have been depressed after some sophisticated statistical analysis from what you might expect if there were a level playing field. So even in the ranks of people working in the industry that might then become business owners, we were not finding representation of minorities and women in certain cases that you might expect given the requirements of those jobs. So this is a major challenge for the Portland area. This is not unique to Portland, but this is a we believe this gives you the basis to do, continue to do what you're doing, but also look strategically at what you can strengthen in your current programs. Let me, Jim mentioned narrow tailoring. There are two parts of the U.S. Supreme Court requirement. Do you have a problem, and do you have a narrowly tailored solution? So let's turn to the narrow tailoring. You and PDC have had quite a bit of investment in doing things for small businesses overall. You have a number of programs that try to strengthen small businesses. So that is a requirement in the court decisions that for you to go on to a race and gender conscious program, you must have seriously considered those race and neutral means. In fact, you've implemented many. And we're not suggesting that you turn away from small business assistance. That may be very important, and many of the issues at the city and PDC can be addressed through removing barriers to small businesses and further support of small businesses. However, the study would indicate that perhaps those measures are not enough alone and that race and gender conscious measures are needed. So we recommend continuing those efforts, and that there is a workforce development angle to this as well as a small business assistance angle. The city prequalification, if we found evidence that not only was it the prequalification system worked against small businesses trying to bid as prime contractors on city projects, but after controlling for size, it negatively affected minority and women-owned firms in certain ways. So this is a very serious matter. It appeared that you were denying the ability to even bid on work to minority and women-owned firms in an unfair fashion, and that your practices are not standard practices compared to other leading cities around the country. You should take a strong look at that. However, similarly to other markets in which we've worked, bonding, which is often required in public sector contracts, is a barrier to small businesses in this market, and perhaps even more so to minority and women-owned firms, that those bonding requirements, remove those firms from the potential pool of business owners that can compete for that work. Insurance requirements work very much the same way, especially for professional services contracts. And then finally, you have a shelter market program, you have a good faith efforts program, PDC has a business equity program. You have a number of policy decisions to make around who is eligible for those programs, what's the real design and intent of those programs, and what kind of muscle those programs have. How many contracts go into those programs? How big are those contracts? Are they really developing that pool of prime contractors of minority and women-owned firms? So I'm going to turn this over to Kevin to give you more details. One of the things I wanted to just say personally, because I've been working in this field so long, is what's different about the Portland experience. And one of the things that from the very beginning was different, in addition to our great team, which is probably it's at the top of the disparity study teams with the local participation of anywhere that we've worked, is involvement of the community that I think the mayor and Commissioner Fish set the tone for this. This was not going to be a black box. It wasn't going to be a disparity study that was just, you know, going to be sitting on a shelf at the end of it with no community knowledge of, community participation in, that you actually probably lengthened the process by having an advisory group involved in this. And that was a very good thing because that group steered you in some very good directions. I know you lengthened the process by the amount of public input you had at the end of this. And there's been as much public input out of the Portland community as any community that we've worked in, we've worked around the country. So you helped make that happen, and then the community took advantage of that opportunity to actually give a lot of input. And that, we think, between the draft report that we put out for public comment and what you have now, we believe it's has a lot more information in it from the community and in terms of very clearly setting out the findings and conclusions. We got good feedback, and we made substantial changes to that summary of the report, and you see that here today. So in addition to our team that I wanted to personally thank, I wanted to thank our advisory group, which endured many hours of we getting into our Kane disparity study methodology details, as well as the public participation process, all those people who gave comments. Kevin?
So, as Dave mentioned, one of the key components of the statistical part of a disparity study is comparing the relative utilization and availability. And so for utilization, we looked at 5 years of data for both the city and PDC. And as was mentioned earlier, we expanded the scope of the contracts that we looked at for the city to include professional services based on the recommendations of Commissioner Fisher's advisory group. So when we set out to do these studies, we worked very closely with staff at PDC and the city to collect that data and to make sure that we have all of the information we need. We also conduct utilization interviews where we attempt to contact all of the firms that were utilized in the scope of the study during the study period and talk with them about their primary line of work, how they do business, and what their ownership status is, whether they're minority or women-owned.
Turning quickly to availability, because we compare utilization with availability, and again, we're especially interested in the results when no programs applied. There's many purposes of an availability analysis. Sometimes availability studies are used to set goals. In federal programs, that's often what an availability analysis does. Annual goals, such as under the federal DBE program, you could have availability information to set project goals. So here's a particular project. Should we set a 25% MBE, WBE, possibly ESB goal on it, or a 15% goal? That's another use of availability analysis. What we used availability analysis for in our study, which is a requirement that Jim described, is provide a benchmark according to the court decisions that we had in front of us and say, if there were a level playing field among the firms available today, what percentage of the dollars would you expect for this set of contracts to go to minority and women-owned firms? And we believe that the courts direct us to do this in a certain way and take the types of work and the sizes of those contracts and whether they're prime contracts or subcontracts into account when we're determining that availability, when we're setting that benchmark for the purposes only of the disparity analysis. There may be a lot more flexibility when you're thinking about a goal, especially a project goal, than the way we describe it here. So for the purposes of figuring out whether there's a disparity in past city contracting, especially when no programs applied, we needed a way of collecting information on minority, women, and majority-owned firms and what sizes of projects they do and what types of work they do without knowing necessarily which firms were minority and majority and women-owned when we started. So we started with the most comprehensive database that we could, which was done in Bradstreet. The information that we used to determine if they were available, qualified, and interested, all the terms the Supreme Court used in the Croson decision, we determined whether they were available for that work. In our view, you can only know that by talking with the firm. You only know the sizes of work they bid on, for example, if you talk to the firm about that, because you can't just use bidding on city contracts as your measure of that, because I've already told you your pre-qualification process works against minority and women-owned firms. So you can't use a city list. You have to have some, we thought the best information was from the firm owners themselves. That's what we did. One of the things that the advisory group has brought up and brought to our attention is something that we think is a challenge in any of this type of research, is to get enough firms participating in those interviews to have a statistically valid pool of firms at the end with no bias toward or against minority and women-owned firms. And our team members and members of the advisory group correctly pointed out that some of the firms that might have been included in the availability analysis weren't. We went back and looked at that. And those firms, many of those firms are firms that we tried to contact, and for one reason or another, we never got a hold of, or they declined to participate in those interviews. We found no evidence, and we looked very carefully at this, that our analysis favored minority and women-owned firms being counted in the pool, or disfavored minority and women-owned firms to be counted in the pool. This is a neutral process. It's a process we used in the Caltrans study that was recently upheld, or the program was recently upheld in court. And it's very similar to methodology that other consultants have used that have survived a challenge in the courts, where they start with a Dun & Bradstreet list, which is a neutral list, and base availability on that rather than a government-provided list. So I wanted to comment briefly about the availability analysis and also caution you that this is not the numbers you see in the disparity study are not necessarily the contract goals you want to set, or maybe if you have an annual aspirational goal. They're really for only the purposes of the disparity analysis, and you have quite a bit more flexibility when you may be looking to implement a program.
So as an example of how we calculate availability, we pulled a city subcontract piece for electrical work out of our database, and it was around $20,000. It was contracted for in 2009. So we looked at our availability database that we built from the Dun & Bradstreet list and the availability interviews, and we found 140 firms that said they were interested in doing subcontract work with the city, that they were interested in doing electrical work, and that had bid on work of that size. 33 of those firms were women or minority-owned, and so the availability estimate for MBE-WBE on that contract piece is 23.6%. And then what we did is we repeated this process for each prime contract and subcontract piece that we studied. So for the city, I think it was 4,000 or 5,000 prime and subcontract pieces. And then we produced a dollar-weighted average of that to come up with our overall availability benchmark. Another very important piece of the study is our analysis of marketplace conditions. And particularly in the Portland area. And the way we look at this is that it's important to understand how businesses come about. And so looking at the entry and advancement to these industries and where people have opportunities to move up into management roles and then eventually become small business owners. So we looked at census data information from the American Community Survey, a number of sources of information about business finances and capital, and provided some stark results about the overall business ownership and business success in the minority and women-owned business community. And so that's a very important piece to consider as you move forward. We also gathered a fair amount of anecdotal evidence, qualitative information about the marketplace. So we did 60 in-depth interviews. Our subcontractors helped us with those interviews. And these interviews covered all topics of what are the challenges in owning and operating a business, what are the challenges specifically in access to bonding, insurance, capital, and also about public procurement processes in the Portland area. And these interviews typically lasted an hour and a half or 2.5 hours, and we got a rich data set of information that's summarized in Appendix J of the report. We also, when we were developing the availability database, asked firms about specific opportunities and barriers with respect to the Portland marketplace, and included that information along with our qualitative information from the in-depth interviews. The third part of the study that Commissioner Fish referenced earlier was the public feedback. So we were one of the only disparity study firms that believes in releasing a draft report and then giving the public the opportunity to comment on it. And as Dave said, in Portland, we've had substantial public involvement, and that's due to the credit of the community, as well as Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fish for making it easy and accessible for members of the community to ask questions, to provide input on their experiences within the community, and to point us to potentially other sources of data that we should consider in the disparity study. So we had a public forum that was very well attended, had a lot of good information, and we also took all this information and considered, added the public forum information to Appendix J along with the anecdotal interviews, and made substantial revisions to parts of the report based on the input from the community.
Uh, In terms of next steps, our recommendations to you, and we're heartened to see that you're already taking some actions, is this is a lot to digest. I think the community has had a bit of time already to start to digest the information and come up with some excellent ideas on how to move forward. And I think there's some people here that's going to share that with you today. There are changes to the programs that you have now that I think are warranted based on the information explained in the report. And as important as anything else, you don't want to say, well, we've done a disparity study, so we don't need to go, you know, we can check that box, we can move ahead, and we don't need to emphasize continuous measurement and evaluation of how well we're doing. We'd like to urge you to put those systems into place to accurately measure, including non-certified minority-owned firms and non-certified women-owned firms. Don't count them necessarily towards meeting a goal or count them getting a preference in a program or participating in a prime contractor program. Those should be reserved to certified firms. But when you're accurately gauging how well you're doing in reaching and in opening up contracting opportunities to minority and women-owned businesses, we urge you to track the participation of non-certified minority and women-owned firms on an annual basis so you have some accurate data going further. This is a program that we hope you don't have to have forever because we hope the problem goes away. That may be unrealistic, and it will take a lot of hard work. Another way of saying that is, our recommendation is don't be shy about strong measures now, because if you don't want a program that just limps along, barely helps firms. What you want to do is, in our view, is have something that makes a difference so that more progress is made faster and you don't need programs. It's been 15 years since you've done the last disparity study. When we were at PDC this morning, one of the commenters said, it's been 15 years and how much progress have we really made here? You don't want to be 15 years into the future and say, we should have done something stronger back then when we had the BBC disparity study. I wish we would have done that. So those are my closing thoughts, and we're heartened to see you taking some immediate actions here, and even stronger efforts might be warranted beyond this.
So thank you, Dave. So adding on to what the mayor mentioned before, we have some immediate actions, and I wanted to comment that these recommendations came directly from the community. They are supported by the study, but these are recommendations that came through the public comment period to us, and there were things that we could take immediate actions on. The outreach to conduct quarterly outreach events, issue electronic notifications of solicitations, assist general contractors with outreach for subcontracting opportunities. Better forecasting, initiate Bureau representative meetings, and look for alternative contracting opportunities as appropriate to encourage maximum opportunities for minority and women-owned firms. As the mayor mentioned, graduate all sheltered market contractors later this fall, cease the sheltered market program as it currently exists, and create an improved and strengthened program to replace it, and review and revise the contractor prequalification program. Our immediate action is with the $250,000 and below, only requiring bonding capacity as approved by a surety and no other additional criteria. For further next steps that take additional work, and we are wanting to move forward and work with the Fair Contracting Forum that is already in existence, other community represented groups, the city bureaus, and PDC to work on the restructure of the sheltered market program, the revisions of the contractor prequalification program, review and strengthen the good faith efforts program, and review and revise the workforce program. And so those are the areas that we are going to work on through the next several months and come back to council with more recommendations in those program areas.
What do you mean by applications, 250,000 and under? Is that bids?
It's a prequalification application.
Oh, okay.
So right now we currently have $100,000 and over you need to put in an application in order to bid on projects.
So because we have a lot, how many people are signed up?
We have about 10 public speakers.
Okay.
I'd like to ask one question of the BBC consultants.
And they're going to stick around as well. Go ahead.
The universe of available contractors and subcontractors, is that everywhere, or is that Tri-County area, or is it Portland
it
only?
It is from one of the requirements in the Supreme Court decision was, in fact, it was in the city of Richmond, and the Supreme Court scolded the city of Richmond for including Aleuts from Alaska in their program, mm-hmm. and said you need to really study the relevant geographic market area for your particular city, which the city of Richmond had not done. We have done that here, and your contracting primarily goes, in terms of dollars, primarily goes to contractors and consultants within the Portland metropolitan area. That was the region in which we did our availability analysis.
Does that include Clark County?
Mm-hmm. It's Columbia, Washington, Yamhill, Clackamas, Multnomah, Clark, and Skamania.
The Mayor, there are 10 people signed up, and we have two panels that we'll present quickly, and then we'll get to the other testify. So if I could invite up the first panel, Marcella Alcantar, Andrew Beyer, and Maurice Romming. If you would come forward, you'll each have up to 3 minutes, and as has already been noted, thank you very much for your service on the advisory group. We spent a lot of time together. They were very robust discussions. And it was a learning experience. It was a dynamic learning experience for all of us. And as the consultant team said, they benefited greatly from the questions and the feedback. So, Andrew, would you like to kick it off?
All right. First of all, Mayor, City Council, I was honored to be on the advisory committee. Appreciated the opportunity. I'm especially honored to be sitting here with Maurice and Marcella to talk with you about our experiences on the committee. I do have a few points to ask you to consider as you work on this resolution and trying to improve the disparities that we have in contracting. I represented the Associated General Contractors as a representative in this particular situation, and Maurice and I happened to be president. Maurice was president of NAMAC Oregon at the time, and part of our challenge there was to try to bring our membership together to have conversations about how to improve the relationship and the dynamics between the general contractors and the minority community. And a large part of what this study points to is a need to improve the relationships between the prime contractors and the subcontractors and to set up a level playing field in the contracting community. I've had a long career both in construction and education, and the first point I'd like to make is that people learn by doing. Earlier comments about the vocational education programs in the metropolitan area are particularly relevant here because the programs, particularly in the central city, have essentially been gutted, and that means that there isn't as much exposure to a diverse community for learning the trades as would be beneficial to our industry. So we are suffering from a lack of diverse, skilled, excited people that understand what tools are and why building is a trade that is both honorable and remunerative. People learn by doing. What gets measured and reported gets done. I would like to suggest that accountability with rewards get results. If you look at South Waterfront, with clear goals and public scrutiny, some large, well-known general contractors improved their workforce diversity from less than 5% to over 10%. Those with better track records came close to 20%. The unions were asked to get involved and to also get diversified. They also are working to improve. I would suggest that those who achieve the goals should be rewarded for their efforts with more work. What gets measured gets done. Practically speaking, to achieve higher goals on bigger projects, Portland needs capable MWESB firms that deliver general contracting services, structure, mechanical, and electrical services. That's where the bigger money is. What will you do to create that result and maintain competitive pricing. Keep it simple. This morning, the City of Portland Water Bureau did a mandatory meeting to discuss the Water Bureau project on Interstate Avenue. It's a $36 million project. The request for